say that there are 44,000 collateral consequences associated with felony convictions. With having contact with the criminal legal system, there are so many things that you can't do, including like things that your family is prevented from doing as well. For example, you can't live with your family if they're having public housing. You can't do that. Like, also, your child can't even be a Gerber baby. You cannot be a caretaker to your parents. You can't adopt. The list goes on. It's 44,000 of them, right? Life insurance, certain health insurance. They will not fund you because they feel like you are high risk and they will not do it. So I just want to name that off top. And most people invest a lot of time with misinformation and disinformation around felony convictions, where it comes as the right to vote. In the state of Georgia, once you are complete your sentence, meaning you're no longer on any type of probation, or parole, right? Like, right. You are able to vote. Like, your right is reinstated. All you have to do is then register to vote. That's mm-hmm. the only thing that you have to do.
Okay. If you've already been registered, do you have to re-register?
Most folks don't know that, and people invest in our demographic not knowing that, right? Because that's a part of our potential power. Mm-hmm. You know, even the percentage of us that, you know, can vote, who are eligible right now, those numbers will be ridiculous, right?
Yeah.
If even a fraction of us was to wake up. So I think there's a lot of time and effort and resources spent into folks believing that they can't vote. Mm-hmm. While I was incarcerated and on my way out, like, it was constantly beaten to me, you know, you'll never be able to vote again. I said, like, so I just was like, okay, well, if I'm not going to be able to vote, I can get my mom to vote for me.
Mm-hmm.
I can get my family members to vote for me, right? Because, you know, you just can't completely just push me out of the process.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can influence. So when I came home, I was not able to vote because I was on parole. I was on probation, actually. And when I came home, during my probation, I worked on a campaign. I knocked doors and couldn't vote and shared with the residents at the door that, hey, like, I can't vote, but you can. You can be my voice.
Mm-hmm.
You can help select who will represent us.
Mm-hmm.
That important. And so, like, I think when I was shocked when I discovered that I could vote, that once I was off paper, I could vote, I had a whole party. I had a party behind me registering to vote.
I love it. My celebration party. Yeah.
And it was amazing. Like, and it was just because, like, I had no clue that I could vote. The other day, like, I registered the full Mendeecy and his son. Mendeecy is just as impacted from off of Love and Hip Hop. Mm-hmm. And he didn't know he could vote. And he got registered the other day. We registered him because, like, he did not know.
Mm. So what exactly does your organization do? Is that what you do? You educate people about their rights and tell me more. Okay.
We educate folks about their rights. We physically register people to vote.
Mm-hmm.
We physically help people get to their polling locations on the day of. We also help to, like, mobilize people to the election board. We also advocate around making sure that all people can get the right to vote, because there are some folks that come home and they're lifers. They have their permanent, like, they have permanent probation, so they'll never be able to vote. And they pay taxes.
Wait a minute. There are people who come home and they will be on probation for the rest of their life?
Yeah, permanent lifers. Like, that's what they are. I have a friend who served 30 years, and she came home, and upon her release, she's a permanent lifer. in the state of Georgia, you cannot be on any type of probation. You cannot be on any type of parole. You cannot be any of that. Not even, none of it. You can't be on any serving any sentence. You cannot vote if you're serving any sentence.
Okay. And so you mentioned something about one of the guards making a joke about, see you later. So I was dealing with another justice impacted writer who noted that she believes they are lying about the recidivist rate. Have you found that to be the case, that in the work that you do, is the recidivist rate lower than what they are telling us, or is it consistent with what you've seen?
So I think a part of like the DOC's job, the Department of Correction, whether it's publicly funded or privately funded, I think their job is to get people into those beds. So I think a part of it is, whether it's propaganda, whether it's whatever it is, whatever it takes to get folks inside those beds. Mm-hmm. So I keep that in mind when I look at numbers and statistics, and when I look where it comes from. I do believe we have a high recidivist rate because of the lack of opportunities. Like, I know that justice-impacted people make up 93% of the homeless population in the city of Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And I know that the area where our office is nested in Mechanicsville, I know that that has the highest rate of incarceration at 94%, mm-hmm. and 93% for recidivism. So almost everyone that goes to jail go back, except for 1%. Are those numbers probably exaggerated? Are they using a small population as a test model? Probably. Mm-hmm. I can't say that for sure, but can I look outside my window and walk past my neighbors and know that it's a problem? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So I could not tell you exactly, because I'm not a data isn't my thing. It loosely is, but it isn't something I crunch every day. Okay. But I can tell you that it is a problem. And who would benefit if those numbers are astronomical and they are fear-mongering would be the people who are owning the prisons, the people who are making money, like Securus, some of those companies. So the fear-mongering definitely helps people in their pockets, for sure.